Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be giving you some tools to enable you to become bigger and better than you perhaps thought you could be. If you've got big dreams, well, why not step up and learn about the Encore Effect? My guest today is Mark Sanborn. You can achieve a remarkable performance in anything that you do. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna, and glad to be talking to you and all your listeners.
Thank you. Mark, you're a man that really has a passion for life. You are the president of Sanborn Associates Incorporated, and you call it an idea studio for leadership, which I found intriguing. You have been very much involved in writing through the years. You wrote a very successful national bestseller, actually two, The Fred Factor, and You Don't Need a Title to Be a Leader. You do a lot of speaking. Tell us your story, Mark, of how this became your passion and you ended up developing your own company to empower other people.
Well, Donna, like a lot of people, my story is grounded in abject failure and challenge. Because what got me started on my course as a professional communicator, both as a speaker and an author, really was an abysmal failure I had in my first speech competition at the ripe old age of 10. I was a farm kid. I grew up on a farm in northeast Ohio. I was a member of a youth organization that still exists today called 4-H, and my club needed a representative. And I thought, hey, I'm pretty good at school. I think I'm pretty smart. How hard can public speaking be? And, of course, the answer is it can be really hard. And I actually share this in my new book, The Encore Effect. I did so badly in my first three-minute speech that it challenged me to really learn all I could about public speaking and learn how to be a good speaker. And I'm very grateful to this day that I didn't just do okay or that I didn't win on my first try, because I probably would have said, you know, next and moved on. But because of that challenge, I really devoted myself to trying to become as good a communicator as I could possibly be. And like all things in life, I believe the skills that make you a good speaker or the skills that make you a good entrepreneur or a good manager, a good husband, a good wife, a good father, a good mother. So truth is transferable, and I have been writing about the things I've learned in my own experiences and from others over the years, and it's culminated in this most recent book, The Encore Effect.
You have some comments in your book. Of course, you've got many of them. I like the book because it's compact. It's something you could put in a briefcase. You can take with you anywhere. If you've got an oversized purse, you can tuck it away. You've got a lot of very direct, concise thoughts. And I want to share a few of them. You say ability determines what you can do. Aptitude determines what you can learn to do. Aspiration determines what you hope to do. Attitude determines what you believe you can do. But passion determines what you want to do. Passion is a word that's tossed around quite a bit. What is your definition of passion? And with so many of my listeners saying, oh, that's so nice. You are a very successful man. You're a very successful person. I haven't found my passion yet. What would you say to that individual?
Well, that's a great question, because I agree with you. I think passion is misused, overused, misunderstood, and it's become so familiar in our conversations and our language that I think it's lost most of its meaning. Let me kind of begin at the end and work backwards. I believe passion is emotional fuel. I believe that passion can be thought of like a gallon of gas. A gallon of gas has the potential to fuel a great fire and move you a great distance, but only if you have an engine to put it in. And I was on the Donnie Deutsch show, The Big Idea with Donnie Deutsch, a few weeks ago, and one of the things that, if you've ever watched the show or are familiar with it, is people are very passionate when they call in, and Donnie likes to say, you know, I can hear the passion in your voice, you're going to make it. and all, with all due respect, you know, passion alone will not guarantee success. It's like having that gallon of gas and no car. You've got the potential with the passion, but until you find an engine to utilize it in, a process, a system, a methodology, then you really just have potential, but no real power. And so for me, I think passion is that emotional fuel that we bring to the things we do that determine not only what we do, but how we do them. And one of the things that I talk about in the book is I think people often short-circuit on this. They say, well, you know, there's a lot of things about my current job I'm just not passionate about. Well, that's true for all of us. For instance, I love to speak, and I love to, you know, to communicate live with audiences, but that requires getting on an airplane. The problem with getting on an airplane is I have no passion for that. It's not that much fun after 22 years and 3 million air miles. I don't get on the airplane because I'm passionate about flying. I get on the airplane because I'm passionate about what I do, why I do it, and for whom I do it. And so in the book, I talk about the fact that you often have to remember that you may not be passionate about a particular aspect of your performance, but you've got three wells, if you will, that you can draw from. The well of what you do, the well of why you do it, and sometimes we do very difficult things, work very hard, work two jobs if you're a single parent to put your kids through college, but you're passionate about why you're doing it, and you're passionate about for whom you're doing it, whether that be your son, your daughter, your customer, your colleague, or a member of your local community. So it's that emotional fuel that not only determines what we want to do, but determines the quality, the panache, the pizzazz with which we do it.
You say self-respect is the first step towards gaining the respect of others. And I think that that is so very, very true. I've found it in my own life. I have found it in observing other people. And it's amazing how somebody can read it about an individual. There is a demeanor that one has that just sort of has a big sign saying, I like myself. I really appreciate myself. And when you do respect yourself, you can honor and respect other people with sincerity. It's not a false front. But you, when you made that remark, you also followed up with, if you ask more of yourself today, it will lead others to expect more of you tomorrow. Let's talk about that for a minute.
You bet. Well, I think one of the things that anyone who is successful has learned is that if there is a price to success, it isn't so much what you invest to achieve it. You know, Zig Ziglar has famously said, you know, you don't pay a price for success, you enjoy the price of success, which is to say that you should be enjoying the things you do that bring success. But I think if there's a price to success, it's that the more successful we become, the more successful others who count on us expect us to be. If you run a mediocre hotel, the guests that stay at that hotel don't expect much. You probably won't get paid much for your rooms, but they won't expect much either. If, on the other hand, you run a five-star resort, and every time a guest stays, they have an incredible experience. When they come back, they want that experience to be just a little bit more incredible. And so we have to be continually polishing and improving our own performance, whatever we do, so that the people who count on us, whether those, again, are the people we live or work with, are continuing to get new value. And it shouldn't be a burden. It shouldn't be an onus. It should be a simple recognition that if you are going to be successful, you just need to realize people are going to have higher expectations of you than someone who isn't.
You talk about particular points. One, commitment. Two, professionalism. Three, skills. Four, values. Five, character. Let's define those a bit. Let's talk about the commitment. To me, that's a big one. Are you willing to be there? Are you willing, regardless of whatever may be going on, to do what you're supposed to do?
Right. Commitment's the price you're willing to pay. I would say performance gives people insight into what you did pay. I mean, when we watched Michael Phelps on TV, even if you didn't know much about swimming or the Olympics, you knew he had paid a heavy investment of time and energy over the years to become that world-class athlete, that, you know, gold medal winning swimmer that he was. So our performance lets people know the price we have paid. Commitment is the price we're willing to pay. You know, someone said, "Don't ever, you know, make the don't make the promise till you're willing to count the cost." And I think that's what commitment is. It says, "I know what it's going to take to achieve the kind of performance I aspire to, and I'm willing to pay that."
Professionalism.
Well, in the book, I define professionalism a little differently than I think a lot of people might have heard before. I believe a professional is someone who worries more about your problems than you do. And that is to say that if I'm a healthcare provider, a professional healthcare provider worries more about my health than I do. If I'm a lawyer, I worry more about your legal health than you do. If I'm a postal carrier, like my friend Fred Shea, the postal carrier I read about in the Fred Factor, what impressed me about Fred is when it came to getting my mail, Fred, as the professional postal carrier, was more worried about how I received my mail than I was. And when you meet people who are professionals, you trust them because you know they're going to take care of you. You know they've got it covered, and that's one area of your life where you can relax a little bit.
It really makes a difference. Let me ask you a question. In today's world, we have so many people that will not feel that that's necessary, that we should be that dependable. It's okay if you just sort of slide by. There is an attitude, and perhaps every generation has this to one level or another, but it's something that seems to have shifted in a lot of what is perceived as the American psyche. Have you noticed that? And if so, how would you see it being addressed?
Well, I've noticed it, and I thought it was just a sign that I was getting older, because when I was young, I remember thinking, wow, older people seem to think that we're not willing to pay the price they paid. So part of it, I think, is it comes from the insight of the years. It's easier to see looking backwards than it is looking forward. Here is, I think, Donna, a great example of the mismatch. I mean, there's two different ways to look at life. I had an employee once that came to me and said, "I want to make more money working for you." And I thought, wow, what a tremendous opportunity. As an employer, this person had thrown open a window for a conversation that I thought would benefit both of us. And I said, "That's great." I said, "What ideas do you have about how you might be able to deliver more value in my business to my customers that would enable me to pay you more?" And that person's response was, "Well, why would I want to do more and create more value until you paid me more?"
Mm-hmm.
And I think that summarizes those two perspectives. The one perspective says, "Give me more, and I'll give more." The other says, "I'll give more, knowing that when I do, I'll get more." And, of course, I believe, obviously, you are on the same page, that we, unfortunately, live in a world that pays for performance, and we can fight against that. And perhaps in a really skewed marketplace where there are far more job opportunities than there are employees to fill them, for at least the short run, we can get by with that. Just keep paying me more money if you want me to do more.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, it's really easy to be mediocre. I tell people, you know, you can get by in life. You can live a very mediocre, very happy existence doing just enough to get by. But I like to hang out with, and I think I resonate with, I speak to and write books for people who want to live life fully. And to live fully, you have to invest yourself. You have to aspire higher. And the one thing I'm absolutely clear on is there is no moral or ethical or legal obligation to do that. It is not an obligation. It's an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that the people that choose to give are truly the ones that get. I think the people who have to get before they give have a very very short ladder that they're ever going to climb in their careers and in their lives.
You have the section on skills. Let's address skills.
Well, you know, professionalism and commitment are a precursor to the kind of skills we develop. And in the book I say that your performance is telling, that by the way you perform, people will know if you're committed, if you're professional. They'll also know where you chose to invest your time to develop a skill set. I mean, obviously, if you're a skilled orator, people know you spend a lot of time becoming a good communicator. If you're a poor communicator, they're going to say, well, you know, he or she might be a good manager, They might be a nice person, but boy, they have not spent any time in learning how to communicate through public speaking or through interpersonal communication. So I think the thing that I would encourage your listeners to ask themselves is this: what does my current skill set tell my customer, my colleague, about what I value? Because that's where we've invested our time, and I know people that have become world-class at playing table tennis, and certainly there's nothing wrong with that. Some of them, you know, might someday become a competitive table tennis player, but when I'm counting on them to get a project done or to make good on a commitment, I'm not so sure that, you know, their hobby of table tennis indicates that they've got the skill set that I can count on in my particular need.
Values is a very important part of a human being. Describe values as you perceive them.
Well, values, again, to simplify, not to go to the Webster's Dictionary, values are the things that we hold important. I like the turn of the phrase, and I don't know who originally said it, but somebody once said, beliefs are things we hold, but convictions are things that hold us. And I always tell people that I know what you value. If I say to you, who do you value? You could give me their names, but I'd rather look at your day timer or your outlook or your schedule, because who you're spending your time with, that's really who you value, not who you say is important. If I say to you, you know, what do you value in the marketplace? You could tell me the things that you think are worth spending money on, but again, those would be your beliefs. Your convictions, your values will be far better communicated by your checkbook or your credit card statement. So I see values at a very practical level as not only being those things we hold to be important, but those things that we invest our time and our energy and our resources in, whether they be people or activities. Yeah, by the way, there's a great quote from Roy Disney of the Disney company fame. He was actually an accountant, but Roy Disney said, when values are clear, decision-making is easy. And I think that's such an important concept in this day and age of unlimited choice. You know, I think the reality is you can't have it all, but the good news is when you know what's important, you don't want it all. I think the unhappiest people I know are the people that don't know what's truly important, and they're trying to have it all only to find out that a lot of the stuff they've accumulated and acquired really doesn't have much value.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me of the Orson Welles movie, The Rosebud.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that popped into my head when you were talking. Character is the last of the five. Define that.
Well, you know, I often say integrity is the distance between your lips and your life. I think character is the distance between your words and your actions. I think it's, again, goes back to what we espouse versus who we really are. Yeah, I know it's a little cliche-ish, but sometimes things become cliches because they're wise. Somebody once said, character is who you are in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the greatest test of character is always goes back to the front, what I call the front page test. If you're about to do something and you're wondering, it might be a little questionable, it might be a little tenuous, a little shaky, the question becomes, how would you feel if what you're about to do appeared on the front page of the newspaper? Because that would be the real acid test of whether we'd be proud or we'd be ashamed, whether we'd acted in good faith or we'd acted in bad judgment.
You have a wonderful statement in your book. Success is found in much smaller portions than most people realize. A hundredth of a second here, or sometimes a tenth there, can determine the fastest man in the world. Michael Johnson is the person that made this statement. At times we live our lives on a paper-thin edge that barely separates greatness from mediocrity and success from failure. And he goes on about life being a marathon. Too many times, I feel, people will look at magazines, will see very successful people, see that they're making a whole bunch of money and say, I want that. But all too often, they really don't know the story behind that person's journey and often what they're living and what they're going through. In your mind's view, how do you see someone as being remarkable? They can be in all walks of life as far as I'm concerned, but what is a remarkable person to you?
To me, a remarkable person is somebody who does the very best he or she is capable of doing, and in such a way that people notice it, value it, and talk about it. I think that by qualifying that, we recognize that different people have different abilities, different resources, and different opportunities. And I never want to get into an argument about somebody who has a greater opportunity than someone else, because some of the most remarkable people I know are people who, frankly, have had very limited opportunity. In the book, I talk about my friend Stephen Hobson, who I met through an aviators group that I'm involved with. Stephen is the first deaf person to receive his instrument rating. Now, just so that your listeners understand, he does have to fly with someone who is not hearing impaired, mm-hmm. so that there is someone to communicate between the tower and the air traffic controllers and Stephen. However, he is the first person who, being deaf, was able to receive his instrument rating. And an instrument rating is a significant accomplishment to a completely able person, much less to someone who's hearing impaired. Well, you know, that's remarkable to me, because if I got my instrument rating, it wouldn't be that remarkable. But if I, like Stephen, were unable to hear, that would be remarkable, because he not only did something that was the best of his ability, he did something that got my attention, that inspired me, that I found valuable. He proved to me that, you know, that we have very few limitations, and most importantly, caused me to write about it in my book and to share the story with others.
The circle of fear. That four-letter word causes more hang-ups, more problems, more confusion, frustrations, aggravations, irritations. Tell us about the eagles in the circle of fear.
Well, you know, the eagles, and I'm an old rock and roller. I always tell people that the music that they call classic rock, you know, which is supposed to be the old rock, that's the real rock. Everything else is poser rock, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we always define our music by our era. And the Eagles, of course, even today, are a legendary rock band. And they were pioneers. They were innovators. The Circle of Fear was simply a way they went about practicing their music so that it would become as good as it could be, that it could become as flawless as possible. And it was driven as much by a fear of failure as it was a hope of success. And I think fear gets a bad rap. I certainly don't advocate living a fearful life, and I don't think I'm pretty sure I'm not a fearful person. But there's a place for fear in our lives. And I always tell people that success is based on some mixture of a great passion and pride in what you do and a gut-wrenching fear that if you don't do it well, you won't get to keep doing it. And again, I don't want to put words in the mouths of the members of the band, the Eagles, but if I were to paraphrase, I think they were driven as much by this need to just never disappoint their fans, never to disappoint themselves, you know, never to be writing or recording or performing music that they didn't think was really, really good. And so the Circle of Fear was a way that they addressed each other, gave feedback, critiqued, and got to the point where they were proud of what they were able to accomplish, because they were fearful that if they weren't critical and if they weren't demanding of themselves, they might turn in an inferior product.
Give us the 5 points that makes what you feel would be a remarkable performer.
Well, and you know, I want to paraphrase a little bit, because you know it's funny, but even after I write a book, sometimes I amend. I've already had one amendment that I talk about from the book that just came out yesterday, The Encore Effect. But I think I would rather define a remarkable performance by the ingredients or the process that goes into it. I find that the character traits or the personality traits of remarkable performers are varied, but that ultimately it begins with preparation. You know, I listen to people that complain that their company won't train them, won't recognize them, won't appreciate them, won't pay them fairly. They go on and on. And so I come to the question, all right, so what do you control? Well, what you always control is how much you prepare. And you can always be better prepared than anybody else who does what you do. You know, whether you're in customer service or sales or healthcare, whatever you do, you can be a little better prepared. And I've come to believe that the people who brag about winging it, you know, I really didn't prepare, I just winged it, they're really not professionals. Or if they once were professionals, they're professionals who are acting like amateurs. Because a remarkable performer is always prepared. Number two, to be remarkable, you've got to practice. I don't know anybody that the first time they got on a pair of skis, skied a diamond slope flawlessly. You learn to be a good skier by practicing, by falling down, getting up, learning to turn, learning to use your edges, learning to weight and unweight. And the problem in business today, Donna, is that we don't make time to practice. We go to work on Monday morning, we play the game all week, we go home like the whistle blows on Friday night, and the best most people get is if they were lucky, they paid attention to what I call practice and play. You know, they extracted a few lessons from what they did during the week and learned. I'm a big believer in what I have come to call POW, and that is practice outside work. And that is making some time to say, what are the skills I need to be better at my job, and doing whatever it takes to develop them. Because the second skill is practice. The third is how we perform. Performance, whether it's on stage at a concert or on stage in an office or a sales floor, is about engaging the audience. Whoever's in front of you, whether it's a customer, a prospect, whether it's a coworker, it's not enough to just present. You've got to engage people because they're preoccupied. They've got a million things on their mind. You've got to capture their attention, and for the time that you have it, you've got to perform in such a way that they find value in what you do. The fourth part is polish. You never stop polishing. Nobody's perfect. No matter how good you become, there's always that next level to become a little better. So the true remarkable performer always takes their last performance and asks themselves, what did I do right, and what could I do a little bit better next time? And the fifth ingredient, finally, is you've got to be very careful, because the only thing that can undo those first four ingredients are what I call pitfalls. You need to anticipate. What are the things that might happen, that could happen, that I need to be prepared for so that if they happen, they won't destroy a remarkable performance? You know, what happens if there's a traffic jam and I need to be at an important appointment at 1? Well, as simple as it sounds, very few people think about allowing extra time for the unforeseen. So I believe the best way to deal with a pitfall is to prepare for it, avoid it if you can, but to be prepared for those pitfalls that you don't control. And when you add those five P's together, you have a template, if you will. It's not a panacea and it's not a cure-all, but it's a way for thinking about how you can take what you're already doing and do it even better. And hopefully, over time, become a remarkable performer.
Mark Sanborn, it has been a delight having you as a guest. Your website, theencoreeffect.com, theencoreeffect.com, is one that's just loaded with all kinds of good things, and people can find out more about your book. They can order it there. Also, they will be able to get some additional tools that you are able to provide through that website. The Encore Effect, Mark Sanborn has been my guest. How to achieve a remarkable performance in anything that you do. Mark, do you have a thought you'd like to share with my audience before we close for today?
Well, Donna, one of my favorite thoughts is simply this, and that is, regardless of our circumstances in life, regardless of the economy, nobody can prevent you or I from choosing to be exceptional. And I would hope that as a result of the good work that you do on your show, and perhaps as a result of a few of the ideas that we've shared today, that the listeners in your audience will continue to choose to be exceptional.
Thank you, Mark Sanborn, and that's S-A-N-B-O-R-N, the spelling of his last name. The Encore Effect is the name of this small book that's quite a powerhouse of information. Go to his website, theencoreeffect.com. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. Again, Mark, thank you for being my guest.
Oh, thank you.
And we are going to be taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Lots more to share. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open. If you would like to give me a buzz and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, these are the telephone numbers you can call in to, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, a direct line of 530-876-3222. Now, if you're a first-time listener, we're delighted to have you join our listening family here at bbsradio.com. And all you need to do when you call in to the station is give me your first name or your initial. And then after that, I will tell you what I perceive. The mind is a wonderful information tool. And then after that, you're welcome to ask a question about anything that you like. I wanted to talk about a very special lady. Her name is Katie Legg. And Katie is a woman, oh, she feels like so many of us do. I don't have enough time to get everything done. Sound familiar? Boy, I know how many times I've said that. Have you ever gone on vacation, you come back, and you think you're never going to catch up because of all the work that you have to do, that you enjoyed your vacation, but you sigh as soon as you walk through the front door because you know of all that that has not been done while you've been gone? Well, she just really, really was feeling a bit overwhelmed. And she had her family, and she's with fun, you know, conversations with people. This person would talk about their problems, and she'd go someplace else, and she'd find that other people had their problems. But she said, there are so many things that go on, and I wish I could do something to help. That's what she felt. However, she had a full-time job. She was a payroll manager. She had a youngster to raise. She was busy. 24/7 mom, that's the way it is. She and her husband, though, had a conversation one day. They decided they were going to adopt a baby boy. Now, her son came from Guatemala, and she said when she traveled there to find out about her child, she was amazed at what she saw. She saw tremendous poverty. She saw things that she knew she could not make a difference about in any way, shape, or form. But she thought after she got home and after she had this beautiful son, she said, there's got to be something I can do. There's got to be something I can contribute in life that is going to make a difference. I'm a mom and I'm a wife and I'm doing all of the things that I'm doing and I know all of that is valuable. But she wanted to do something extra. She said, there are people here at home. There's floods, there's fires. There's injuries, maybe they've gone through a divorce. And she was just ruminating over this. Then the light went on in the brain department. She said, there are so many different agencies, so many different organizations that people can go to for help if they need it. And what I will do, I'll email a request to a network of volunteers, and whoever can help, helps. No big time commitment, no pressure. That was her idea. So she asked her families and friends, do you know what? They all got enthusiastic. That sounds wonderful. Then she said, now I need somebody to help me. Well, Katie designed an email friendship tree. Within just a matter of days, she got a call from someone that said, we're a family of six. Dad's out on disability. We're just making ends meet, but we don't have enough basic like shoes for our children. Well, Katie got in touch with the friendship tree, and within a very short period of time, she had shoes for the children, a bag full of clothes for each child, and there was even a Walmart gift card for the mother. Katie was amazed. She said, this works. Now, what do you think happened? Yes. With the internet, with communication, tell a person and the word spreads. You just do what you can do. That's all people had to do. Nobody was under any obligation, nothing. They just became a part of this wonderful friendship tree. And all she would do is put in the subject line whenever she sent something out, someone needs our help. Well, more and more people were joining. There was a mother who was having a terrible time making ends meet because her husband was waiting for a kidney transplant. There was a grandmother on a fixed income who had suddenly been awarded custody of her two grandkids. There was a family of five who lost everything in a fire. There was a mother who was very ill with cancer, 2 weeks even shop for a present for a teenage son. Every time Katie sent something out, within hours or even minutes, those people that were a part of her friendship tree emailed back, I can help. They donated clothes, furniture, diapers, electronics, groceries, gift cards, and whatever else they possibly could come up with. The thank you notes were coming in from these families saying, we couldn't have gotten by without your help. We are so grateful. But the members were excited, too. They said, thank you, because it's giving me the opportunity to help you. In fact, the people that were involved with this enjoyed doing what they were doing so much, they wanted to do more. So now, this is something that they're doing with a friendship tree. Friendship tree members also sponsor back-to-school haircuts for families who just don't have the money to have their kids' hair cut. Baking cookies for the troops, hosting parties at nursing homes to give residents a lift, having baby showers for struggling moms-to-be they've never met, sending out get-well cards to cheer up sick children, signing up birthday buddies for kids who otherwise wouldn't get a cake of presents. Now membership has zoomed to over 349 people, and Katie's dream was initially to help one family a month. To date, they have helped over 800 people. She said, it's just wonderful. It's just growing and growing. And she said, it's amazing what we can do together. And that's so true. I think one of the hardest things for me to learn was to make it okay to tell people that you needed something. It doesn't mean you're begging. You know, you're not holding a cup out in your hand on the street corner. That's not what you're doing. But here is an avenue, because of the wonderful opportunity of internet, where Katie was able to just invite people. If they wanted to participate, they could. If they didn't, they didn't have to. Isn't that wonderful? That's part of what I think is the positive human character. One woman that is reaching out to so many people and enjoying the process, and she's a busy gal. This is a passion for her. Remember we were talking about that in the first part of the program today. A passion. This is something she wanted to do more in a special way. And people are helping her do it. She doesn't have to do it all by herself. And that is very, very significant. Now, here are some other tips that I think that might assist you as well. You can get notified about recalls, safety alerts issued on food, vitamins, toys, and all kinds of things by signing up at recalls.gov, that's recalls.gov, and cpsc.gov, C. Charles, P. Paul, S. Sam, C. Charles.gov. So those are two websites. Also, there is a website, healthywomen.org, healthywomen.org. They have medical advice specifically for women. And if you want to learn some techniques about how to do something differently, you can go to momsrefuge.com/lists. momsrefuge.com/lists. And then if you'd like to get stuff for free, you can join an organization called freecycle.org. freecycle.org. People just give away what they don't want anymore, and hey, you might find something that you really, really need and don't have the money to pay for, and they're willing to give it to you just because they don't want it in their home anymore, or their garage, or their summer house, wherever it might be. Who knows, maybe someone in the family has passed away and they want to just get rid of some things. So there's some stuff for you. It's free, and it's a good thing, I think. What do you feel? I think you would enjoy it as well. You know, ideas come in all sizes, shapes, colors, designs. There's just so many things out there. And sometimes what we need to do is just put it out there. And if you know of someone that perhaps can help, go for it. It's a very, very big world. And it's amazing how many people might be looking just for the very thing you need assistance with. But if you don't ask, you don't get. It's an old saying, but it's a true one. Well, I know we're going to be going on break, but before we do, I want to let you know about some of my wonderful, wonderful guests. And I have to apologize. I finally got my list up yesterday of all my guests, and I had hoped to have it up sooner. But when you're on the road traveling, sometimes you're not able to get things done as efficiently. And my email newsletter should be going out today. I apologize for being late. But it is just one of those things, and what I can't control, I'm not going to go to war about. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Egan Sanders about a wonderful, wonderful book called The Magic Box. This is a story that will lift your heart, lift your spirit, and it's something that you would probably want to pass along as a gift to someone. Don't forget, those holidays are going to be rolling around before we know it. Then if you're a baseball fan, if you have a love for the game, you're going to want to know about a Native American called Chief Bender. This man is incredible. He has been in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Tom Swift has put material together about this man that is very, very inspiring. We're going to be learning a little bit about history and about a game that is, well, very, very close to the hearts of most Americans and, believe it or not, to many different cultures around the world. I have been amazed at how significant baseball is to millions and millions of people. So we're going to be talking about that this week. Now, next week, we're going to have Chris Widener on the Art of Influence, and then we're going to have Tim O'Brien. Tim is a repeat guest. He's with Ripley's Believe It or Not. And of course, when I was growing up, that was the first thing I ever read in the comic section. I loved that. I still do. I just absolutely am fascinated with all the weird and funky stuff that they come up with in Ripley's Believe It or Not. And then we're also going to be talking about the rescue of wild mustangs in White Sands, New Mexico. Nobody's Horses is what we're going to be talking about. And then John Penberthy, To Be or Not to Be, and that's B-E-E. Yeah, those little flying critters. And then Frances Yates in the Hermetic Tradition, metaphysical, a woman that was renowned as a historical scholar regarding the Hermetic Tradition. So we've just got a great lineup of guests. You won't want to miss any of it. If you should have to miss it because you're working or something else, remember, we do have the archives that you can go to whenever you want to hear what's going on the Donna Sebo Show. Meanwhile, we're going to take a break. Don't go away. When we come back, I'll share with you how to create a family cookbook. And then, well, a very special happening with a certain person. And a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast, with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
I have a very dear friend that I've known for many, many years who is an avid cook. She just loves to collect recipes. She's always trying to do different things. Oh, by the way, if you want to chat with me, dial 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756, and I'll be glad to give you a reading on the air. But anyway, with this cooking, she is just absolutely amazing, and she has some wonderful recipes. And one of her dreams has been to put together a cookbook. Now, as it turns out, her mother and her grandmother had a collection of recipes that she happened to be gifted, and she was so excited. She said, I didn't realize that all these recipes my mother and my grandmother had kept. And so she started experimenting with them, and there were some she liked and some she didn't like. But when she could, she sat down with her mom and said, what are your favorites, and do you have any special memories about these recipes? And what evolved was this wonderful conversation and wonderful stories about what happened when they fixed the recipe or whatever. And so she started to compile these little stories. And now she's got quite a file, and she said, I want to put together a cookbook. Well, she's very busy working right now, so that hasn't come together yet. However, she said, one day I'm going to do it. Well, I came across some information on how to create a cookbook, if this is something you'd like to do, for your family. So many families have certain recipes that they just absolutely adore. I know my mother had received a handwritten cookbook from my grandmother, and she had these old recipes like for homemade potato soup and various things that, being in the eastern part of the country, there were special recipes that were just really suitable for certain times of the year. We lived out on the West Coast. We lived in California. So these were things we didn't fix very often. But I can remember when my mother got that, that really meant a lot to her, because my grandmother was quite a good cook. So I don't know whatever happened to that, because I've never had the good fortune of receiving it, but there is something that I have acquired in my own time through the assistance of friends. I have some wonderful, wonderful recipes. And, of course, my friend said to me, gee, Donna, I would love to know, you love to cook too, I'd like to know what your favorite recipe is. So she's gone another step, and she is trying to collect recipes from friends, and she said, write about what you do with this recipe, what makes it so special. Just put a little story with it. So one day I'm going to be in her cookbook, I hope. But if you want to do something like this yourself, and it's something you can do in odd moments, and it's a lot of fun, And you know, what a better gift. What if you wanted to gift a young woman that was getting married and saying, here are some wonderful recipes that you might want to try out. And you can do it. It'd be a wonderful gift if you wanted to pass along your favorite recipes to members of your family. Great way to do it. Lots of people will create scrapbooks. Why not a cookbook? Well, you can get as many people involved in this process as you desire. And the best way to start it out is to give the person what you would want in a recipe form format. And you want to be able to have space in that format for various ingredients, the directions, and you want to have, again, those extra space for the cooking tips, the history behind the recipe, and any interesting things that could be added to that. And if they will, have them take a photo of the finished dish or have something that's an illustration of type. Then what you want to do is to pick an organizational structure and you want to follow it. How do you want to present it? Do you want to have it by the chef's name, the cook's name? Then put all of whoever that person is, all of their recipes together. You might want to bundle all of the appetizers, maybe the entrees. What about the desserts? You can do that. And then you're going to want to create a cover and maybe add a special page giving the information about all of the people that helped to put this together. And the tip was you might even want to have something like a family tree type of a design. We could put in people's faces and have pictures of them. Then, once you've got everything organized, you're going to want to protect it, and that's where laminating each page is going to really assist. Have you ever had a cookbook where you'd open the page and you know that it was right next to the stove or someplace because it's got all kinds of stuff on it? It's a well-seasoned cookbook. I've got a few of those in my house. Well, lamination really protects whatever pages you might make up. And you can make multiple copies, use a three-hole punch on each page, and put it in a binder, and that makes it really easy to use for people. It's a fun gift. And you can use a self-publishing site like Lulu.com, and you can have your cookbook printed, bound, and shipped to you and your family members for less than $10 a book. And this site will enable you to customize everything from the binding to the cover itself. But if you do it yourself, it's going to give that special feel. And sometimes it's great to have kids get involved in this, too, because then they can use their imaginations. Maybe dedicate a section to the children. What are their favorite recipes? What do they like to do? Anyway, that's just a few tips to share with you, because I think it's fun when you can put something like that together and it's great to pass along. I know I have a whole cookbook. A girlfriend of mine used to listen to a radio show in California. Every day this guy would give out these wonderful recipes. The listeners would call in, give him their favorite recipe, and then, this is before email, and then he would talk about it on the air and involve that person when they were given the recipe. The show was a smashing success. I have got about 2 inches of recipes in a binder, a recipe on each page, or 2 recipes on each page, and it is amazing the good stuff that people are able to put together. And if you're like me and you love being in the kitchen, it's a fun thing to do. So it also, again, that homemade cookbook makes a wonderful gift. This is Donna Sebo. I know that we're out of time. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about the magic box. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Be extraordinary in what you do. Go above and beyond what is expected. Let your light shine in such a way that when somebody sees it, they'll say, I know who that is. That's an exceptional individual. Be exceptional. There's plenty of room for it. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be here, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. The Donna Sebo Show. Bright and sassy, Monday through Friday. Talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.